Salty. My name is Jesse, the African Son. I'm here with Ephraim Romanje. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm alive and I'm blessed, as always, you know. How are you?
What should I say? We're just coming from Kwibuka 30. I don't know if you participated in any events, did you?
Yeah, I attended the Night Virgil. Yeah.
What were your major takeouts for this Kwibuka 30? I know it's continuous, 100 days of commemoration, yes, of the genocide against the Tutsi.
I would say, you know, again, reiterating what I'd mentioned before, as time passes, it's very easy for people to try rewrite history. We all know what Anthony Blinken wrote on X. Instead of calling it the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi, he called it the Rwandan genocide. And we all know what... And then he even went and started talking about all the different ethnicities, and which is tantamount to denial. And so, like I said, it's the fight continues to ensure that that memory stays, the memory of those who lost their lives, but then also to just remind us as a nation that our brothers and sisters, our uncles, our aunties, our siblings, ourselves are dealing with the heaviness and the scars that come with living in a post-genocide world, right?
I have loved the concept of digital Kwibuka, and especially for knowing the technological times where we are at, and that the onus is especially on the young people to understand and to take responsibility, center stage on what has to be done to not take the country back from where we're coming from, the dark days of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. And I think I'm so impressed with the approach. What I have seen from the Office of the Government Spokesperson, they have now episodes as podcasts. That are actually airing on Royal FM every evening at 8 p.m.
That's good.
And I think this approach now leaves no one behind.
Yeah.
Because it's a digital age. It's the Internet of Things. That's the space where we are.
Yeah.
And we cannot leave the Blinkens of this world.
Exactly. To say what they're going to have to say. Yeah.
Yes. Today on the episode, we want to talk business again.
Living entrepreneurship.
Living entrepreneurship. I've just been looking at where I am at, and from some of my peers that I'm talking to, it's continuously difficult days for business. What we have seen is the economic recovery after COVID, businesses still struggling to stay resilient. We've seen that as a country, Rwanda is resilient, but business is struggling here and there. Then the war in Ukraine and Russia, then we now have Israel,
now we have Israel,
Gaza.
Now we have Israel and Iran.
Iran.
Yeah.
So,
and then Dubai. Don't forget Dubai. Dubai with that rain. We laugh, but it's actually going to help. Like, there's going to be a lot of cheap products on the market because of like water damage.
That's Are you my, sure that's it's going to be prediction. Cheap products on the market, or it will be China now to benefit as traders look more towards China?
You see, what you don't actually understand about Dubai is that Dubai is not a manufacturer in of itself. Dubai is a transit center for not just goods, even people, but it's a transit center. And what that simply means is that Dubai is a touch point for the Belt Road initiative for China. So China's trade policy of distributing their goods around the world, Dubai is at the center of it. That's why Dubai has thrived.
It's a transit center. Yes, I do agree. It's a hub for business. A product that comes from China into Dubai, as a trader from Rwanda, by the time you buy it from China, I mean from Dubai, it's a little more expensive than if you went directly
to China. There's a margin of the trader in
And then China. There are several other products that are coming in from Singapore and all these other places into Dubai. So it's a hub of so many things. But I can hear traders start to speak of, if you cannot drop into Dubai, then the next option is you have to go to China.
I mean, again, I'll keep repeating. I'm like, don't underestimate how intertwined global economies are. Even when you see Iran and Israel doing what they're doing. Don't underestimate how the two of them probably are trading in some form. Obviously, I know that's just talk. But what I'm just trying to say is that don't underestimate how intertwined global economies are, right? And what that simply means is that Dubai, I repeat, is like you have a warehouse full of rice. Let me use that as an analogy, right? Mm. But the warehouse is in Chinamb, as an example, right? But to be able to sell your products, you go and set up a small duka, either in Chimironga Market, Nyabugogo Market, or Haria Karite Mateus, Kigali City Market, so that you have a front-facing element to your business. So a lot of the Chinese factories, when you see a business in Dubai selling those products, it's actually Chinese selling those products. They'll just put somebody else there to talk, an Indian, a Pakistani, an Emirati, just to be the front face. But the products are actually originating from the factory. So what they do is that they create kind of like what Guangzhou is. Like, they know that the actual manufacturer doesn't know English. He's not going to front face with an African who's coming from Nigeria. Instead, what they'll do is they'll get some guy who speaks good English and then they'll give him a company and put him in Guangzhou and say, that's his thing. So when you see his stock in his warehouse, that is actually product from somebody else, somewhere else in the country that's manufacturing that stuff.
Interesting. Mm. Before we even digress so further, so all of these happenings around the world are contributing to the hardships that we experience today in doing business on a day-to-day. Mm. And this is why I wanted us to pick a conversation today. So when you're struggling as a business, your cash flow has been affected, you have so many debtors to clear, then you have the taxes, RRA is pushing that you have to be compliant and you have to do that cross-border. I was reading a story the other day, I think just a few days ago, about how too much potatoes are stuck at the borders of Kenya and Uganda because apparently the taxes in Uganda have gone 10 times higher than normal.
On potatoes. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. So these hardships here and there. So as a business, you start to consider, where do I pick the funds to operate? I wanted us to talk about factors that a business should consider when deciding whether to take out a loan to finance their operations or even for expansion plans.
So, Jesse, you've given me an exam. And why do I call it an exam? It's because I think I shared with you my personal beliefs on debt, right?
Have we spoken about that?
I feel like yes, we did, actually. I remember when we had a meeting with
Sarah.
And we talked a bit about it, not at length, but enough for you to understand where I stand. So, to answer this from a businessman's perspective is going to contradict my own personal belief. Because I have my own personal beliefs, but I don't know if it's one size fits all for the rest of the world. I can share, but again, disclaimer. Sibjo? Okay. So with that said, I came across a video and the title of this particular, it was a short, a YouTube short, and the particular title was Debt is Agnostic. Now, what that statement simply means is that debt does not have a belief structure, and the debt is just debt. It's an instrument. And debt should be taken when, one, you have the capacity, significant capacity to pay it, and you have the collateral to back it up. And so I'm now giving you the science of debt before I tell you about my own personal beliefs, right? So when you understand that debt in that context, then you ask, where do most people get debt from? So most debt comes from a lender. And most lenders, what they do is that they lend against assets. They fund future cash flows against assets. So what does that simply mean? They need to see that you have generate cash. You're cash positive. That's number one. But then you need to have assets to back up that loan, right? So that's the collateral. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, but why do banks ask for collateral when they give? It's because, hey, if I'm going to give you my money, I need to know how I'm going to get it back. That's the fundamental aspect of it. So when you understand that that's debt, you now ask, okay, it's cash flows, it's against an asset. What does that simply mean? Now, it means that you need to have an asset, and you need to have, that asset needs to generate cash flows.
Mm.
Or you need to have other assets that generate cash flows. Now, you use debt, why? Because the cash flows are coming in too slowly for you to, you need a boost, or you need an advance so that you can make some investments to increase your capacity to get more assets that can generate more cash flow, right? Now, in the context of a struggling business, debt to meet cash flow challenges is the worst thing you can do as a struggling business. If you are struggling as a business, cut costs. Don't take on debt. Supplier debt, bank debt, because at the end of the day, as much as people will say that debt is agnostic, also debt can punish you if you handle it badly.
Mm.
Number one, if you take debt for consumption, what does that mean? You know what I mean, Jesse. You get a loan, guy gets a loan, car changes, work changes, clothes change, phone changes. Like, and you're like, what about the business? It's like, yeah, no, but I think I can indulge a bit, like, because I asked for more than I needed, I have enough. And so you find that we see it. And it's not, and I think banks have become the wiser. So now what banks are doing are focusing more on consumer loans than bank business loans. How many businesses have you talked to recently that tell you that they got a loan from a bank? Most people are funding operation shortfalls using bank lambe. That's the truth.
Which is a significant problem
which
today.
Which is worse.
Yeah.
And do you know why? It's because if you know the loan shark on a personal level, he's not going to ask you for a collateral. And so you find that guy is like, I'd rather take that because I don't have the assets to put up. It's going to help me meet payroll this month. I will at least pay my supplier who's on my neck. Then I'll figure this guy out next month because I'm expecting a payment.
Mm.
Or render revenue. I'm going to pay my taxes. One. And so what I'm trying to tell you is that when we talk of debt in that context, you realize that if it's just a tool, then it comes down to the hands in which the tool is. So it's just a matter of capacity. But now let me tell you my beliefs. So I'm a trader, right? Or at least I was a trader. I could say that 80, 90% of my day was filled with trade-related activities. Mm-hmm. Services came in much later in my career. Now, what that simply meant for me was that I needed cash to operate. And so, not profit, cash. I needed cash and cheap cash. So obviously I devised ways of being able to access cheap cash. Either in my services business, I receive funds which I know I can delay payment on, use that cash to trade and then put it back. Or, you know, a bunch of just, I would say, risky, haphazard ways of trying to take risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I understood that I needed the cash. But now let me tell you the interesting thing I learned, right? When it comes to risk, Jesse, do you believe in luck?
In luck?
Yeah.
To say I'm lucky, it's a far-fetched statement. I normally say I am blessed because all my efforts are really the efforts of God working through me.
Now we're getting deep. Do you believe in risk?
I believe in risk.
But if you believe in luck being ordained by God, then can't risk also be a godly phenomenon? It's not limited. It's not.
This is how I handle my risk. Uh-huh. I take risk as a faith thing, that uh-huh. I must exercise my faith to take on the risk.
Uh-huh. Now, you see, we're getting somewhere with this, right? So let's say you are a trader.
Hmm.
Who picks, or a business person who is, you're based in, let's say, Gaza, and you export products to Iran. And then this Israel mess or situation arises.
Mm-hmm.
What's your perception in that context of risk? Could someone have foreseen that type of risk?
Like by divine power to foresee it coming?
Just like you're a business person and you're quote unquote planning to mitigate risk. So you're risk planning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could you have predicted that? That Hamas was going to attack, Israel was going to retaliate, and then at some point Iran was going to get involved.
I believe in business, there are things that are in our control, and then there are things way out of our control.
Exactly. And the same way that things out of our control on the negative, there are also things out of our control on the positive. Mm-hmm. And that's where luck comes in, or blessings. That just some good thing. Haven't you ever noticed that some opportunities you get, and it's almost like it was you are lucky. Just some rooms you enter, some people you meet, some relationships you build. Yes, you have the skills, you are prepared. Yes, you are capable. But why you? Are you the most
not
skilled?
Not entirely lucky. Again, I would not use the word lucky. I would say orchestrated steps.
By divine power.
Divine power.
Now,
yes.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. If you believe in risk, you have to believe in luck. Hmm. Or in this context, if you believe that luck is divine, then you need to believe that risk can also be divine. And there's a reason why I'm bringing this up, is because the same thing, you can never predict what will happen when you take a bank loan. But let me tell you an interesting thing that I've watched when I study bank loans. Loans are like, or let's call it leverage. What are loans, right? Mm-hmm. So I have my own capacity. I have 3 million. Let's take, for example, building a house, your mm-hmm. mortgage, right? I have 3 million. Or 30 million. I want to buy a house of 100 million. My salary can cover the monthly amounts, right? Mm-hmm. The value, the bank is going to probably take the house as collateral, right? So that's the asset. The cash flow is my salary or my income, right? Mm-hmm. The 30% is my skin in the game. So I can go buy a house of 100 million with only 30 million. Mm-hmm. So I've leveraged my 30 million to get more. So what normally happens, even when the financial crisis, it was an issue of leverage. The banks were over leveraged. And I'm not going to get into the mathematics because it's a bit complex. But the same thing happens in business. You only have 100 million francs in working capital, or 10 million francs. Let me get a bit smaller. You only have 10 million francs in working capital. And so meaning you can only from that 10 million generate, let's say, profit per month, a million. Let's say you're lucky, you're at 10%, right, mm-hmm. on your working capital. If you get a bank loan, the monthly payments are only 1.6%. With the assets that you have and your cash flows, you get an extra 50 million. So now, you remember you're on 10%. So 50 million plus your 10, that's now 60. You're getting 6 million off of your initial 10. So you have leveraged your future cash flows to get this money. But now what happens if those cash flows never come?
That's a big question. Yes, you're listening to Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. It's Jesse here, and Ephraim Romwenge. Stay around, because this is going to get interesting. Welcome back to Living Entrepreneurship by Salty. It's good to have you here on the show. Now, in the first part of this conversation, you would start to think, is Ephraim trying to allude to the possibility that it's a bad thing for you to take a loan when you are doing business, because you should not? Are you starting to be influenced by his personal beliefs around if you should or if you should not? Now, last weekend, I've been having this construction project going on. Mm. So I'm in a conversation with my engineer and my sister, who was looking towards get into the bank and pick a loan to service, you know, her operations in the business. And I was telling her, why would you take a loan? Mm. And I have never taken one. Mm-hmm. She's like, what? Mm-hmm. You've never taken a loan? Mm-hmm. So how do you do what you do? Like, I use cash. You must be too rich. I'm like, why do you say I'm too rich? I saved money to do what I do. Like, no. You should leverage the things you have done and established to get loan, to use the loan to make more money. And I started to think, maybe I should. My engineer told me the same thing. Why do you have to build using cash?
Jesse, do you believe that there is free lunch in this world? If you get something for free, do you think it's
who is
free?
Serving it?
That's the question. Hmm. If you find them, let me know. Because I don't know who gives free lunch. There's no free lunch in this world. If you're going to go and leverage and make a lot of money, the universe is going to make you pay for that. How, I don't know, but you will. Let me tell you something. Debt is a jealous mistress. She will never want you to leave her. That is the fundamental reality I had to, it dawned on me. I'm like, immediately you take debt, why would debt want you to stop using debt? Like, it's a jealous mistress, at least for me. And because I'm a Christian, I look at it from a spiritual perspective, right? Mm. From a spiritual point of view. There is a spirit around debt. And even the Bible says that the borrower is a slave to the lender. Tell me, where have you ever seen somebody who owes more than they are owed in whatever form? This could be in your shares in the company, you're owed by your company, your return, your capital is there, you have investments. Where have you ever seen someone who is over leveraged and they've succeeded at life? That days are numbered. The days are numbered. We know the saying in vernacular translated into English that the days of a thief are what? Are 40.
Mm-hmm.
That means the 41st day will come. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. Like, for me, my personal belief is, man, debt is risk in of itself. Just take your money with your capacity and manage at that level. If you lose your money, you've lost your money.
Is this just a myth that actually the super rich leverage what they have established for themselves to become more richer, and that they will take on more debt and more debt to create more wealth, and that they use the debt to offset their taxes?
Uh-huh. So you've talked about two different things. You've talked about how do the wealth accumulate that wealth, and then how do the wealthy accumulate that wealth, and how, and then you're also asking about this, an element of taxes in line with the debt.
Mm-hmm.
Let me talk about the accumulation of wealth first. If you study a lot of success, like ultra wealthy, let me not talk about, because you can't really know anybody at a lower level, but the ultra wealthy, the most of their business, the trajectory of their businesses is public.
Mm.
So you can find out how they made that money. Interesting thing is that most of them leveraged relationships and leveraged capital, not debt. You know, seed funding, Series A, Series B, Series D, then an IPO. What were they doing? They're not getting loans. They were leveraging the company's future cash flows and the asset of the shares of the company and the potential it has to do what? To get capital to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave those shares at higher valuations, and that's what took them to the stratosphere of the growth, not debt. Now, we take a step back. When we now talk of taxation, these individuals are already wealthy. So what they do to offset taxes is that they go and take a loan, and then they use the shares as collateral, and the cash flows from there to offset that taxes, because the interest on loans is actually non-taxable.
Mm.
So what happens is that as they're paying off the loan from the returns from the company, there's a way that they don't end up paying taxes. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're using debt to grow their wealth.
I don't know why I have this feeling that someone is listening into us today,
mm.
and they're saying, Ephraim, you're not even too serious,
mm.
because my business is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
The financial institutions are in place.
Mm-hmm.
They have money, which I can go and peak and survive.
Which business, which bank is going to, financial institution is going to give you money when you're struggling? You know, there's a running joke that says that a bank is a place that will give you money if you can show them how much you don't need the money. A bank is the kind of place where they can't give you an umbrella when it's raining, but immediately the rain stops, they're like, do you need? Banks don't help people in need. They help people who actually can make the money. Don't get it twisted. So someone who's in my business is struggling, I can get money from this situation. Okay, you go. You go. You tell me how it goes. They're not going to give you that money.
Okay, what is this whole element of as it overdraft? Is it a purchase order financing?
Oh, check for Saj. There are different instruments out there, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
There are different instruments. There's letters of credit that are, but by the way, letters of credit these days are secured by cash collateral. And so that cash collateral has to be given to you either as your cash, or your, which is your capital, or as a loan. There are different instruments. There are bank overdrafts. I'm trying to remember. These term loans, for example. These asset financing. There are all these things. I would say if truly you feel like I need a loan to grow my business, get asset financing. And get productive asset financing. and ensure that the cash flows on a bad day can generate at least 2 times your monthly obligation. So if you're going to get an asset and you, it generates for you when you add it to your business, it's adding to you 3 million. You should ensure that, I mean, if you're going to be paying per month 1.5 million, you need to ensure that that asset is generating for you 3 million, just to be on the safe side on a bad day.
Let's remember, our people, our everyday people. I am a consultant, I'm doing this. I have messed up with the taxes. Just the other day, a friend called me and said, hey, I need help. I don't know, but I think something is wrong. I have CIT of 86 million. And I don't know who to talk to.
So they want to go to the bank and get that loan?
Not that they were going to the bank, but of course now their finances are messed up. They have to clean up that with the authority.
The solution is not a bank. What I'm trying to tell you, Jesse, is this. You don't, when you're in a hole, you don't dig further. If you're struggling, cut costs. Fire those workers. Tell them, but most people don't fire because they're like, when I fire, they're going to ask me for money.
As well.
You see?
There are legal implications.
That's what I'm trying to say. But that's what I'm trying to tell you. You would if you do it the right way and you fire people, obviously with retrenchment, because legally we are allowed, you're allowed to retrench. A company is not banned, is told you suffer in losses because you're not allowed. We have the legal framework. So just follow the legal framework around retrenchment and let go of those people because you can't afford to pay them. If you can't afford the office, close it down. If you can't afford your car, park it, work from home.
Are we saying there is no hope? Once your business is starting to go the wrong way financially, there is no hope.
It's not about hope. It's
because, for instance, a consultant would not need asset financing.
What would he need? Working capital? Man, let me tell you, my no consultants, eh? The ones that I know, the money comes, they spend it like there's no tomorrow because they know they're getting more tomorrow. Bro, I know, I'm telling you. And actually, even when the ones that I know, I've tried to talk to them and tell them, guys, invest in cash flow generating assets. I keep saying this, assets that generate cash flow generating assets, cash flow generating. Didn't I even say it on Tuesday? I said, anybody who understands, who's serious about their life, will look for assets to generate cash flow. Not a chiwanza that is sitting somewhere and you're not generating any cash flow from it. Look for things that can give you cash and add to your investment, because there's compounding. Even today morning, you're talking about the conversation you had with Isaac. I mean, Friday morning, you're talking about the conversation you had with Isaac. How he talked about how time had gone, he had wasted so much time, and there are all these things about compounding. And do you know what helps with compounding? Invest in assets that generate cash flow and then forget about it. So those cash flows will generate and go back into the investment and to compound. But unfortunately, we have this logic where we are like, when I'm struggling, I need an injection. Do you know it's easier to control your spending than it is to control your income?
Yeah, it is easier said than done.
Jesse. If you don't have money to pay someone, stop procuring their services. But I need what? You don't have money.
Bazavuga.
Let them talk. No, they say, are you the first person to not have money? Even them, those who are going to talk, they don't have money. You die in poverty because you're trying to impress who? Sell your car. Tega moto. Changwa, buy a Vit. Or your Prius. No, Prius is expensive. Buying a Zazindi, what are they called? Yaris. Sell that kavewit changwa, that Rava 4. Go take your 12 ma, and then go take nga like 4. Buy yourself a small Yaris, and then even, do you know what's interesting about a Yaris? It's even more fuel conscious than a Rava 4.
You're giving too much credit to these manufacturers of the Yaris.
But it's the truth, man. Do you think the fuel consumption is the same? What I'm trying to say is that if you're struggling, be a grown-up about it, right? I've talked about the difference between blame and responsibility. You are responsible for fixing your life. No one else is. So don't go to a bank and ask for money. They won't even give it to you.
In the current economic climate, what would you say are the most important considerations or risks that businesses should keep in mind before committing to taking on any additional debt through a business loan?
So first and foremost, how are you performing with your current debt? So status assessment. Where are you today? What have you done to get to this point? Now, are you servicing your current debt well? That's the first question. And what is well?
Mm-hmm.
Well is, are you servicing your debt and have an extra left over for you to grow your business? Because why would you be working for the bank? If you're working day in, day out, and you're paying all the interest and you're left with nothing on the account for yourself, then you are technically employed. Actually, I hope God, you just go to the bank and ask for a badge and business cards. You can go chief cash supplier. I don't know what they'll give you, call you. But I'm being serious. Why would you go day in, day out, you struggle, and all you're able to barely do is pay rent, pay salaries, and pay the bank? And then they say, well, what about you? So you're going to work your whole life for your employees, the bank, and your landlord.
So Ephraim, you're saying when the business is going bad, it's not the time to run to the bank to seek for a loan.
No.
When do you go in the cycle of business? When do you go to the bank to pick a loan?
You want Ephraim to answer? You want Ephraim to answer? Let me give you the answer you want. If you really have to take a loan, go to the bank when you're looking for a tool for expansion. Expansion. Don't go to show up your cash flows. Don't go to bridge some cash flow issue. That one, figure it out. And I hope, God, you're a grown up. You're not a child. So why are you going to somebody else to fix your problems? Fix them.
Last question today, because I have to cut you short.
No worries.
So a loan has gone bad. I picked a loan from the bank. Mm-hmm. The loan has gone bad. My mm-hmm. business is doing so bad mm-hmm. because I misused the loan.
Mm-hmm.
I bought Cherie
a small
V8.
Small V8. You got a loan from a bank and bought a V8. Yeah, Baba. What about the fuel of 800K? Do you know the price of the cost of fuel? Okay.
Now there is the panic mode. Uh-huh. They could take the house. They could take whatever standard. The assets that we have.
Standard,
right?
Mm.
But what should good managers do when loans they've taken have gone bad?
First and foremost, pick up phone calls. Like that. And I'm not any different from the next man. I hate uncomfortable conversations.
Mm.
And the one of what's the plan? Thank God I don't have any debt, like operational debt that I have on my head.
Mm.
Maybe some legacy issues from times past. But as of today, I'm a free man. And that gives me peace. I even keep saying it to my loved ones. I'm like, I can even be home, hungry. As long as I have peace, no one is calling me and going, no one is I'm a frangayant. So my point is, first and foremost, pick up the phone call. The person you owe money has every right to call you. Now, here's another issue. When the person who calls you, I was telling this to a friend who is dealing with something. When the person calls you and they abuse you, bro, you took that money. They have every right to abuse you. Forget about your pride. Immediately you took that money. There's nothing like pride. I like the word I'm using, Kinyanda. Sorry to the international audience. You have become the person's employee until you give them back the money plus the return. And so you can't be upset that your boss abused you. Your boss abused you. So if you want to quit, give them back the money. You retire from the job. But that you are, borrower is a slave to the lender. So for me, I would say pick up the call, let them abuse you, but then also be practical, right?
Mm.
If you're going to make a promise on when you're going to pay, let it be based on reality. I know it's a quick fix. There's a dopamine hit when you tell somebody something and they calm down and they're like, okay, I'll get my money next week. But if you know for sure you're not going to get that money next week, chango yao, basing it on the hopes of somebody saying, the hopes of somebody honoring a commitment to you, don't make that mistake. It's too much stress for nothing. And you can't, by the way, when you're stressed about paying debtors, you can't work. Or creditors, sorry. You can't work.
Listen, we have to bring this conversation to a stop this weekend, because it can go on and on and on and on. These are everyday things. experiences that we have in trying to run business. Should I take the loan? Mm. Should I sell my property to run the business? Mm. What do I do? You're passionate about what your initiatives as an entrepreneur, but then
next week I will try to answer it the way people want to hear it. But I'm anti-debt. Like if there's a hashtag anti-debt. Do you know Dave Ramsey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let anybody who's has listened to me and is interested is not like writing me off and saying, that guy is mad. He doesn't know. He's living on a cloud. He has a lot of money. He's not under pressure. Okay, go watch Dave Ramsey and you hear his story. This is somebody who's worth $400 million. He has never taken a single loan in his life. He doesn't even, him and his wife have never had credit cards. And this is in the US. How do you build a real estate empire with no debt and you get to $400 million? And I think it's probably even higher than that. No debt. So I'm going to say leverage. Here is. I like the way I'm anyway, continue. We're going to talk for
all Living time. Entrepreneurship by Salty. Go find us on all social media handles.
Yeah, that's Salty Africa on X, on Instagram, on TikTok, on YouTube. That's SALTEE Africa. Please do follow, share the content, like the content, engage with us. If you don't agree with me, you can hit me up and say, yo, you can find me at Ephra, that's EPHRWA, on X and on Instagram, on Facebook, it's Ephraim Ramwenge. Jesse's the same.
The reason I would like you to go find Ephraim, especially for this particular episode, is you need to watch him because there's a video and I want you to see his lucky suit. I call it the blessed suit.
I know, right?
Otherwise, God bless you and thank you so much for listening. Please share this information because someone might need it to just simply live through the next episode of their business. God bless you again and bye-bye.